Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey. Family, welcome to day 285. We are looking at Psalms 99, 100, and 101 today. For the past couple of days, we've been in this mini collection of Yahweh Reigns Psalms. Psalms that are really focused on the kingship of Yahweh, on the throne of Yahweh, on the reigning and ruling of Yahweh. The connection, or the context, really, has been David's recentering of the presence of God in Jerusalem, the rebuilding or the reestablishing of the tabernacle, and bringing the Ark of the Covenant back where it belongs. So today we are actually going to end this kind of mini series about the Psalms that are all focused on Yahweh's reign. All right, we're going to finish that section and we're going to look at these final three Psalms. Now, I'll give you a precursor, just kind of like a heads up. Psalm 101 is not technically a part of this little mini collection, right? Psalm 99 and Psalm 100 are. I think I told you a couple days ago, everything from Psalm 93 to Psalm 100 are a part of this little mini collection. However, Psalm 101 fits perfectly after this collection. And there's a small part of me that would love, I kind of want it to get grafted in. But anyway, I get why it's not. But I'll make a case for that in a little bit. All right. If you have not done the reading for the day, then stop the video, pause the audio, go get the reading done, and then come back, all right? If you have done the reading, then let's dive in. Like every day, I'm going to give you context clues to help you understand and orient yourself to what's being written or what's being read, rather. And then I'm going to give you some nerdy nuggets, some things that you wouldn't have been able to know just by reading it on your own. And then I'm going to leave the episode, end the episode with a timeless truth. I'm really excited about our timeless truth today. Let's dive into context, all right? The context is Yahweh's triumphal entry into Jerusalem to reign from his tent, from his tabernacle. These Psalms, Psalm 99 and 100, they make sense without context, right? You could read Psalm 93, 94, 95, 96, 97, 98, 99, and 100. And they'll make sense. Like, they're reasonable, they're logical. But the moment that you know that, okay, these Psalms are most likely being sung as the Ark of the Covenant has been at Obed-Edom's house, the Ark of the Covenant has not been in its proper place, and David is putting the Ark of the Covenant back in the tabernacle so that worship, like, could actually begin to function again. In all three areas of worship, not just the singing, but the service and the sacrifice, okay? So that that tabernacle worship can actually do what it needs to do, okay? So that's the context. With no context, these Psalms are clear. Once you have context, they become even clearer. I want you to think about these Psalms as Yahweh's triumphal entry into Jerusalem. Remember, in the Gospels, Jesus is going to have a triumphal entry into Jerusalem. And once you realize, oh, wow, there was a triumphal entry into Jerusalem in the Old Testament as well, you can begin to make some connections between the Old and New Testaments or covenants. All right, let's dive into some nerdy nuggets, okay? Psalm 99. Immediately, you know, we kind of get that same theme that we've been getting in verse 1. The Lord reigns. Let the nations tremble. Okay, why do the nations need to tremble if the Lord reigns? Well, it's because he doesn't just reign as king over Israel. He reigns as supreme king over all the earth, okay? And if the nations have been in rebellion against God and have not been submitted to the lordship of God, then yes, they should be trembling with fear now that Yahweh reigns, okay? So the people definitely saw that putting Yahweh in his tabernacle didn't just have implications for how the people of Israel were to be affected by Yahweh, but how the nations are to be affected by Yahweh, okay? So the Lord reigns, okay? We've seen that, those words, those three words repeated over and over and over again. in this collection of Psalms, this mini collection. It says this, he sits enthroned between the cherubim. All right, so you may be wondering, all right, what does that mean? What does enthroned between the cherubim mean? Well, the Ark of the Covenant is going to have a mercy seat on it, and there are cherubim that are facing each other on top of the Ark of the Covenant. So this is ark language, okay? When it says he sits enthroned between the cherubim, this is the presence of God that rests between the two cherubim on the lid of the Ark of the Covenant. Essentially, this gold box that we know as the Ark of the Covenant, okay? And so Yahweh sits enthroned between the cherubim. This is the biggest clue that we are definitely talking about the Ark being brought back into Jerusalem to rest in the tabernacle, okay? So this is called the mercy seat, okay? The mercy seat, the place where once a year, the high priest goes with the blood of the lamb and sprinkles what? Sprinkles the mercy seat, okay? In the Holy of Holies and makes atonement for Israel, the mercy seat, okay? Yahweh sits enthroned on the mercy seat is another way to say between the cherubim. Because what's between the cherubim? The manifest presence of Yahweh on his mercy seat. In order for Yahweh to sit amongst us, it requires mercy. Okay? His holiness wants to kill anything that is not holy. But God, in his mercy, instead of his wrath being poured out on us, his mercy begins to abate that wrath so that we can experience the manifest presence of Yahweh. It's actually an incredible thing. Let the earth shake. Great is the Lord in Zion. Remember, Zion is essentially Jerusalem. Okay, Jerusalem. He is exalted over all the nations. Let them praise your great and awesome name. He is holy. All right. The king is mighty. He loves justice. You have established equity. In Jacob, you have done what is just and right. Exalt the Lord, our God, and worship at his footstool. So now things flip. A moment ago, the ark was the throne or the seat of Yahweh. And now it's the footstool of Yahweh, because Yahweh essentially declares the heaven is my throne and the earth is my footstool. So what we have is that in the tabernacle, we have two realms overlapping. I love to use Narnia as an example of an overlap between earth and Narnia. Well, the wardrobe is both. It's both Narnia and earth. And then the same way, the tabernacle and then later the temple is supposed to be like a Venn diagram, where there's heaven on one side and earth on the other side. Everything that overlaps is heaven and earth. And the temple is supposed to connect heaven and earth. It's supposed to occupy, or both spaces, both heaven and earth, occupy the temple. I was going to say the temple occupied both spaces, but I guess that's also true. But that overlap is the temple, okay? That space where I'm in heaven, I'm also on earth, is the temple. And so it is both the throne, but it's also the footstool. And then we get this cool little part. Moses and Aaron were among his priests. Samuel was among those who called on his name. They called on the Lord and he answered them. Okay, so what's going on? Why do we get Moses and Aaron and Samuel mentioned in this psalm? Well, I'll just kind of read it to you as I've got it in my notes. The big idea is that Moses and Aaron were a part of establishing the original tabernacle, right? When God first gave instructions that he wanted to dwell amongst his people and they should build him a tabernacle, aka a tent, okay? And so David is saying that same authority that was on Moses and Aaron is the same authority that I'm walking in by reestablishing that tabernacle, by rebuilding that tabernacle, by reinstituting a tabernacle worship system, okay? He's kind of saying, hey, I'm tipping my hat to Moses and Aaron and Samuel, because remember, Samuel is this hinge leader. Samuel, like Moses, occupies three distinct spaces. He's a prophet, he's a priest, and he's a king figure, okay? And so Samuel when the tabernacle is destroyed, he, as a person, acts as a mobile tabernacle. They can perform sacrifices any place Samuel goes, as long as Samuel's presiding over the sacrifice. All right, let me kind of read it to you the way I've got it here. David restoring the tabernacle and bringing the ark to Jerusalem connects him to a lineage of people that have prioritized these same elements, the tabernacle and the ark. Moses and Aaron, especially Moses, were crucial in setting up of the original tabernacle and placing the ark within it, so establishing Yahweh as king in the center of Israel. Samuel is mentioned alongside them as a Moses figure. He, like Moses, was a prophet, priest, and king figure. He therefore had the same authority and permission to establish a tabernacle and place the ark inside. He did it at a place called Shiloh. He had anointed David to rule, like Saul before him, but Saul failed in this task. So David rebuilding the tabernacle and placing the ark inside of it is sanctioned by Yahweh in the same way as the original. Okay, so the authority of his chosen priests set up the original. Okay, the authority of Yahweh's chosen priests set up the original tabernacle. And now the authority of his new chosen priest, aka David, will set up the new tabernacle through his chosen priest, David. All right, so this psalm highlights Moses, Aaron, and Samuel in Yahweh's relationship, and that David is continuing in that legacy, okay? That's really, 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 really important. There's a nerdy little detail, but it gives us a clue about the context of what's going on. All right, Psalm 100. I spent so much time giving you nerdy nuggets for Psalm 99. All right, Psalm 100. Since Yahweh is now back in his tabernacle, seated on his throne, exalted as king over his people, they are encouraged and invited to enter his gates with thanksgiving and enter his courts with praise. That's Psalm 100, verse 4. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name. Yeah, actually, one of my earliest memories as a kid, maybe 5-6 years old, is I went to a church that said that every single Sunday. Let us enter into his gates with thanksgiving and enter into his courts with praise. And so one of these days, maybe when we're done with our year-long trek to the Bible, I'll kind of do a lesson here on the podcast of how I pray. Because part of the way that I learned to pray a couple years ago was walking through the tabernacle. And so when we think about enter into his gates with thanksgiving, when Jesus taught us the Lord's Prayer, it starts out with hallowed be thy name. It starts out with thanksgiving and praise. And man, I could get into a timeless truth here, but I won't. But I'll give you like a mini timeless truth that a lot of times gratitude, thanksgiving, and praise, if you start your prayers with thanksgiving and praise, you'll find out that the things you were gonna ask God for, by the time you're done thanking him and praising him, you begin to realize, I don't even need the thing that I thought I needed. Thanksgiving and praise should always front load your prayer. We don't want to thank God after we've asked him for stuff. I guess the formula that I've always given people is praise should precede petition. Praise should precede petition. Of course, I could petition God for all kinds of things. Of course, there's things that I need. There are things that I want. But man, I want to enter into his gates with thanksgiving. I want to enter into his courts with praise. Actually, the formula that I always use is praise and then petition and then prophecy. I want to prophesy that these things are going to happen. And then I always end with praise. So praise, petition, prophecy, praise. And then the final praise is a praise in advance. God, I believe that everything I've asked you for is already done. All right. Psalm 100, I want you to put this verse that you're probably very familiar with, enter his gates with thanksgiving, enter his courts with praise, in the context of now that the tabernacle is set up, now that the ark has been placed inside of it, now let us shout for joy to the Lord, all the earth, worship the Lord with gladness, come before him with joyful songs. Know that the Lord is God. It is he who made us, and we are his. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name. For the Lord is good. and his love endures forever. His faithfulness continues through all generations. Okay. Now that this whole process from Psalm 93 all the way to Psalm 99, all of this work has been established to bring the ark back to the tabernacle, to put it within the tent of meeting in Jerusalem. Now that that's all done, Psalm 100 is the culmination or the response. And then we get to Psalm 101. And all these Psalms from Psalm 93 to Psalm 100 is all about how Yahweh reigns. It's all about the reign and the rule of Yahweh. Well, guess what Psalm 101 is? Psalm 101 is almost like, it's a royal psalm, so you need to know that. But it's not royal in like it's messianic that it prophesies about Jesus, the Messiah. It's royal in that this is a psalm of David that functions like a royal oath of office. This is what the king of Israel would swear to do in his role as king. This is a promise that King David is making. That is this, these verses is what he promises he will do. Some scholars even think that this was an oath put to song by David, but aimed at his descendants. So they would swear this as they ascended to the throne to be coronated as king. This psalm then is what it means to be a king of Israel under the authority of the true king, Yahweh. So Psalm 101 then is also like a response to everything we've read from Psalm 93 to 100, or really from Psalm 93 to 99. If Yahweh truly is enthroned on the mercy seat, if he truly is enthroned between the cherubim in the Holy of Holies, in his tabernacle, in Jerusalem, and since his rule and reign is the center of life for the people of God, then I should be leading in light of his leadership. I should be ruling in light of his rule. I should be reigning in light of his reign. I should be governing in light of his governance. Okay, so this is the oath. We'll read Psalm 101 together. I will sing of your love and justice to you, Lord. I will sing praise. I will be careful to lead a blameless life. When will you come to me? I will conduct the affairs of my house with a blameless heart. I will not look with approval on anything that is vile. I hate what faithless people do. I will have no part in it. And that's not just faithless like, I don't believe. That's faithless like unfaithful would be probably a better word there. The perverse of heart shall be far from me. I will have nothing to do with what is evil. Whoever slanders their neighbor in secret, I will put to silence. Whoever has haughty eyes and a proud heart, I will not tolerate. My eyes will be on the faithful of the land. They may dwell with me. The one whose walk is blameless will minister to me. No one who practices deceit will dwell in my house. No one who speaks falsely will stand in my presence. Every morning, I will put to silence all the wicked in the land. I will cut off every evildoer from the city of the Lord. All right, that right there is David's oath of office. That's his promise. Yahweh, since you reign, since we have enthroned you on your, in your tabernacle, aka your palace, where you govern, I now must govern in light of that. And these are the things I'm oathing. I don't even know if that's a word. Promising, oathing to you, declaring what I'm going to do. And this moves effortlessly into our timeless truth, because this is actually just a good blueprint for leaders everywhere. No one should be leading as if God is not the leader. I can only shepherd the people that God's asked me to pastor in light of how he shepherds. Like, I can't be a shepherd with different character or different values than the chief shepherd. I'm shepherding in light of the shepherd. And I've experienced this even when I was a youth pastor. I wouldn't give people advice that I didn't think my senior pastor would give them. Okay, my job is to lead in light of how my leader leads. And for David, he's saying, well, there's no one above me in the org chart but Yahweh himself. And so since Yahweh leads a certain way, I'm going to lead that way. And I think it's good for all of us to practice that same principle. I want to lead like God leads. I want to lead like Jesus. And let's even look at this, okay? I will sing of your love and justice. To you, Lord, I will sing praise. Guess what I know as a senior pastor? Doesn't matter who I eventually recruit or hire to be a worship leader, I'm the worship leader because I'm the pastor of the church. And I don't have to sing to be a worship leader. I just have to be a leader who worships. Okay, next, I'll be careful to lead a blameless life. When will you come to me? Like, hey, I'm gonna live a pure life, clean hands, pure heart. I will conduct the affairs of my house with a blameless heart. What good am I to lead God's people if I can't lead my own home well? I will not look with approval on anything that is vile. Woo, that's good, man. That's self-explanatory. I hate what unfaithful people do. I will have no part in it. If you read through Psalm 101, you begin to realize this isn't just a good oath of office for David. This is a good oath of office for every leader. It's a good oath of office for anyone who's in leadership. And the bigger timeless truth here is that in the same way that David needs to lead in light of how God leads, you need to lead in light of how God leads. I need to lead in light of how God leads. And I don't want to lead in such a way that I'm actually leading people away from the one who I'm supposed to be leading them towards, which is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. He's king, and he's king of this king. I'm not a literal king, but I'm a leader. And he's the leader of leaders. And we lead in light of his leadership style. And that's not just true for David. That's true for you. That's true for me. That's timelessly true. I don't get to lead in his name, but not lead the way that he's asked me to lead. I follow his example as I lead his people. We got a lot of leaders who somewhere along the way forgot to follow. And I'm not able to lead until I am able to follow. It's my ability to follow God's lead well that actually enables me to lead others well. And that is the blueprint that David has outlined here in Psalm 101. And I think it's a good blueprint for you and I. Tomorrow, we've got day 286. We're going to be looking at Psalms 102 and 103. I can't wait. I'll be right here. Same time, same place. We're going to be looking at two more Psalms tomorrow. If you're on a streak, I'm so proud of you. I love you guys so much. 285 days down. And I don't know, what's that? 80 days to go or something like that? Something. My math isn't good. I didn't get a doctorate in math. I got it in Bible. I love you guys. See you tomorrow. Peace. Thank you so much for joining me on the Bible Department Podcast. If this episode was helpful, it would mean the world to me if you'd give us a follow, rate and review the show, and don't forget to share. You can learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and find us on Instagram at The Bible Department. If you want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. What if I told you that what you're learning in this video was just the tip of the iceberg? The Bible Department is actually powered by Arma. What is Arma? I'm so glad you asked. Arma is an online subscription-based platform that we designed to help people, everyday people, learn the Bible for themselves. We started Arma so that anybody, anywhere, could have access to trustworthy and entertaining Bible and theology content. In addition to this podcast, we have over 60 courses on individual books of the Bible, on theology topics, and on some hot topics like homosexuality, tithing, and women in ministry. But really, Arma is a community of people that I've gotten to know, a community where thousands of people are currently finding family, asking questions, and nerding out on the Bible together. If you want a community to read the Bible with you this year, or if you want to dive into some deeper theological content, or if you want more exclusive access to me and the entire Arma team, how about you go to thebibledepartment.com. I'll be sure to post the link in the description of this video. Let's make this your year to become a Bible nerd.